The next category, we're talking about percentage leases. I read many conflicting things on this. And again, I just read an article recently, and it had to do with leasing. And this person was saying, what you should do is go after the lease that is based on the cost of living index. And I don't know who wrote that article, but they obviously are the college professor type, because that is not the reality of being out in the business world today. Because what you're going to find in the business world, even though you're reading things to the contrary, I'd suggest after you read the book, check with the average business owner and find out what the real way to go is. Because here's the problem. First of all, let's talk about percentage leases. And you're going to find they're going to say the percentage that you're going to pay on a restaurant might be 6, 7, or 8% of sales. In a clothing store, it might be something different. And there are standards that have been established. It's almost like price fixing. And if you go to your library, there are many books down there that have to do with leasing. And in there, they will spell out the different percentages that are standards in different areas of the United States. And you're going to find that you're going to be generally in that category. For those of you who are trying to find out what you can charge, that's another guide that you can use. Okay, and it'll give you a fix on it. Now, a percentage lease is not bad. And I like percentage leases very well because I don't like the other that we're about to talk about. Why? Because on a percentage lease, and I'm paying, say I was paying 5%. If I was paying 5% on that lease and we had an inflationary period, I would normally raise my prices a certain percentage. And what happens is my rent would go up. But that's fine. The owner of the real estate then is sharing on based on the same thing. And if I am a good business person and raising my rates and prices at a rate equal to or greater than the inflation rate, then the owner of the real estate is being reimbursed at the same level. Now, the next category we're running to here is a cost of living adjustment, which is another method they use for figuring out how they're going to raise your rent in the future or get more money out of you. And one of the things is a thing called the lost cost of living adjustments and price indexes. And what you're going to find is they base it on that. They'll base it on a certain year, 1967 or whatever. And what it'll say is, based on the standard you had of the year you went in, as the cost of living index goes up each year, or the price index, whatever index you're using, you're going to find that they raise the rate that you have, the rent that you're paying, or the lease payments you're paying. The only thing bad about that is that cost of living index has a lot of phony stuff in it. It was based on the increase of housing in the last few years. And what we have here is a problem. And you're going to find that in this index, although the interest or the inflation rate may be 5%, you're going to find that this cost of living index goes up at a rate faster than that, which means that you end up getting gouged on it because of the stupid cost of living index. Now, the government has been in the process of changing this and changing some of the information they base this on. And again, at the date of the recording of this tape, the government still hadn't released it. And the basic problem that we have is the new cost of living index is going to be a lot fairer. But the problem is there are a lot of government people or people on retirement that have their increases in the amount they receive based on the cost of living index. And over the last few years, one of the things that they have gotten, and I don't mean to be political here, they have gotten raises in their retirement and other things that are in excess of what they're supposed to be getting. As a taxpayer, I think you're going to understand why I get a little upset. But you're going to find because of that also politically, they're having a hard time putting it in. So keep checking to find out when they're going to put it in. And in the meantime, what I suggest you do is go to a percentage lease. Control of conduct. Many business owners find that as they get involved in a business, they find themselves in violation of the lease. And what happens is you read the lease and you assume things. As you find things that are contrary to what the lease says, like control of conduct, the use of the premises, the type of business you have, the kind of merchandise, quite often the lease was signed 5 or 10 years ago and the person that owns that business now has changed various things, has not gone back to change the lease. And the owner of the real estate normally doesn't say anything. They've gotten verbal approval. It's now 10 years down the stream. A lot of things have changed, and you come in as a new owner. Now, the thing you have to realize is I'm suggesting, you ought to do this, you should go in and have the lease adjusted or get a variance from the owner of the real estate. And if you're going to do this, do it before you take over the business. If you don't do this, you'll get a notice after you take over, and it'll say you're in violation of the lease and you have 30 days to leave, or whatever your state law states. And what you're going to find is they really don't want to kick you out. You've been paying your rent on time, or the former owner has. What they'd like to do is take that rent you're paying, or that lease payment of $1,000 a month, have you sign a new lease, and have you pay $2,000 a month. So when you do find these things, I suggest you go into the owner of the real estate and change and negotiate these things before you take over. If you don't, you're going to be sorry. And that is not based on reading a book. That's based on personal Hamel experience. The next thing they have is damage or destruction. On total destruction, may either party terminate, And is there a partial termination or destruction clause? Well, the thing you have to realize is, the basic thing I want to say is, if you're the person buying the business and you're the lessee, does that clause apply equally to you and to the owner of the real estate? Or do you find that they're able to terminate the lease if one little stick is missing, whereas you have to have 110% destruction? Again, I'm exaggerating a little there. But when you start to read these leases, you will not believe what some of these have to say. Number one, they were written by the owner of the real estate or their attorney. And you're also going to find the poor person going in to start that business didn't check them out, didn't know what they were doing, and they certainly weren't going to spend any money on an attorney because they would have wasted money there. And it's foolish because for the amount they would have spent on an attorney, it's going to cost them 20 times as much every year of that lease, which means you haven't saved a cent. What you've done is cost yourself money. How do I know about that? I used to go the wrong way many years ago. And after it cost me a lot of money, I decided to use the attorney. It's the best way to go. The next thing is condemnation. Is does the lease terminate if all or part of the parking area is taken? And although many of you come to me and say, well, gosh, we don't really have parking. We have valet parking or we have special permits. The thing that's going to kill you in business, especially where you have a retail type operation or other area where you have parking, if you have a temporary fix, keeping in mind that our purpose in business is you and your family, me and my family, to stay in business 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. Eventually, I just want to tell you, every time the parking problem is going to come in and kill you, you're going to find the parking problem is going to come in and eventually sink your business. So you better make sure you have it solved. The problem we're talking about here is condemnation. And suppose you have a business and you have 40 parking spaces, and supposedly because of a road widening or other types of condemnation, you lose half the parking spaces. And it influences your business. You better realize, you better make sure that there's a termination clause in here, because this is a bigger problem than we have found, than the damage or destruction. Condemnation, this type, road widening, problems, change of zoning, have goofed up an awful lot of business owners, more than the section on damage or destruction. So please be careful. The option to purchase. Check to see if the option is still valid. Again, many of you read those books on how to start a business for under so many dollars, and the option to purchase is never spelled out in those little Mickey Mouse books. And so what I'm suggesting to you is on the option to purchase is read it to see what it has to say. And you're going to find in most cases it said that at the end of the lease or sometime during the lease period, the owner of the real estate, the lessor, and the owner of the business, the lessee, will sit down and discuss an option. You have to have it spelled out in detail. How are you going to purchase it? Will I finance? And you have to have it spelled out ahead of time. Now, if you're going in behind somebody else that owns the business and an option to purchase is necessary, what I suggest you do is sit down with the owner of the real estate before you take over the business and negotiate it. You're going to find owners of real estate are just as nice as you are. In fact, many of the owners of real estate also own businesses. So go and talk to them, but do it before you take over or before your client takes over. The lessee's fixtures, rights of removal. In this area, we have two different sides because if you'll check with your attorney, especially on the East Coast, we have probably more case law in the area of fixtures and leasehold improvements than any other area. And again, what is the difference? Fixtures. Mostly in the East and the Midwest, we find people calling them fixtures. On the West Coast, Midwest and West, we're calling them leasehold improvements. We're calling them leasehold expenses. What's the difference? Not much. The basic thing we're talking about here is whether you're talking about fixtures or whatever, we're talking about those items that we as business owners attach to the wall. They're either leaning against the wall, they're screwed to the wall, they're nailed to the wall, they're fastened to the floor, whatever it happens to be. And there are state laws applying in this area. But the main thing is the lease will spell out what the owner of the real estate wants or what the lessee and the lessor have agreed to. And what you're going to find is it may say that you can't remove everything, anything. And what you're going to find is your lease runs out in 2 months. You have $400,000 in fixtures or leasehold improvements. You can't remove those and take those with you. You're going to find in most cases you have to leave those there. So number one, when you're buying a business, you better make sure about that. Well, I mean, why do you want to buy them? Why don't you just rent those from the former owner for a couple of months until you move someplace else? Because you're not going to have those. You're buying something that doesn't exist. It exists, but you're not going to have it in a few months. That's something that stays with the owner of the real estate. Now, the other thing is, you better realize, as you read those leases, your attorney reads the lease, there's another clause that you're going to run into occasionally. And what it's going to say is, the good news is you take it with you. The bad news is you have to remove it. And in some cases, you may be in a regional center where the owner, the person that started that business, had to put in the concrete floor, the floor, the walls, the heating, the air conditioning, the johns. And although leasehold improvements or fixtures are worth $100,000 today, you say, boy, that's great. I could take those with me. You're going to find it's going to cost you $1 million to remove them. So please, either you or your attorney, would you read these and make sure that you haven't misread this? Why? This could end up destroying you in business. It's not something we read about in the little books. Hours of business. Another area that very few people think about, and the reason I'm so hung up on this, I've been involved in a lot of businesses over the years, and a lot of my friends have, and a lot of the graduates of our programs, where they've been hurt by hours of business. Because you're going to find, if you don't have standard hours of business in your center, your strip center, your mall, and if the management isn't strong and doesn't enforce it, you're going to find that you're going to end up being boycotted by the customers. And the reason for this is, even though you open at 9 o'clock every morning and close 6 o'clock every night and you're good about it and you do it 7 days a week or 6 days a week or five, and all the people around you are artsy, craftsy type people, and you're going to find that they sort of open and close whenever they feel like it. As other people come to the center where you're located and find the other people are not consistent, they're going to end up not going to visit any business in the area, including yours. And again, on this tape, I am not going to recite these, but if you look in your area, go around and visit a few centers, and you'll find if you hit 10 of them, there's probably going to be two or three of them that have the problem. Talk to the owners, and they're going to tell you the problems they have because of the business hours. What you want is a strong operation. You're going to want a management group within that center or in those buildings or in that area that enforces those rules. Or maybe you're going to have to, if you have a number of buildings, you may have to put together a merchants association to try to force everybody through an association of and talk to about the benefits of all staying open the same number of hours and being consistent, because consistency is the key in business today. Consistency. We start to talk about the next category here, which is the right to sublease. First thing we're asking is it valid without the lessor's written agreement? And again, usually will not release the lessee from liability. And the first thing is it valid without the agreement of the person who owns the real estate? In other words, will they let you, the owner of the business, and the lessee off the lease? And that's not going to happen very often. You're going to find in real estate that people want to keep you on the lease because that gives them an access to you as the lessee. The next party then coming on the lease, the person you sell the business to, will be the sub-lessee. And again, the thing we're saying is it valid without the lessor's written agreement? You're going to find, right after this section, we have included a lot of information here that has to do with a recent court ruling. Because a recent court ruling, if you'll just look at the section, holds that a lessor cannot unreasonably withhold his consent to the transfer of a commercial lease by the lessee, even though the lease states that the lessor's consent is necessary for a transfer and does not provide that the lessor may not unreasonably withhold such consent. Where we are in this right now is we have the two parties. We had Cohen and Ratanoff go to court a couple of years ago. And what happened is the person that owned the business had not done well during the transaction because the person that owned the real estate had held back the approval. And even though the person that owned the business did not win at the first level, when he went to the California Court of Appeals, the California Court of Appeals then decided in 1983 that you could not arbitrarily withhold approval. Now, at the present time, there's a chance that this may also go to the California Supreme Court. And I've talked to my different attorneys on this in the last few months, and they've told me that their feeling is that the courts will probably not change the ruling, so this may stand. Now, for those of you that are not from states like California, what we suggest you do is go to your attorney and have them refer to this ruling if the owner of the real estate does decide to arbitrarily withhold approval. And again, you can quote this. Why we put all this information in here for you? Well, you can use this if you're able to read legalese. If you're not able to read legalese, what I suggest you do is make a copy of this and take it to your attorney and have your attorney do some research on it. And again, is it going to be important? Yes, because it has come up quite a bit. The next thing we have now as we turn the page is we're going to be talking about two other types of leases. We're going to talk about the sign lease and we're going to talk about the equipment lease. And the thing that's really interesting is we talked about the fact that you're probably not going to get off of the equipment or the building lease if you happen to be the owner of the business. But it changes a little when you get involved in a sign lease and the equipment lease, because you're going to find on the sign lease, you're going to find they will let you off. They will let somebody else assume the lease most of the time. You're going to find that the maintenance, insurance, taxes are usually paid by the lessor. Again, the sign company. You're going to find that there may be a right to purchase. And again, you're going to be making payments, and you're going to find at the end of the period, depending on the sign company and the state you happen to be in, or the tax court area, they're going to have different rules as to how much of the money will apply to the purchase price and how much you have to then add at the end. The only thing I want to warn you on, if you do end up converting a sign lease to a purchase, remember to have a maintenance contract. In addition, you're going to find your costs on the sign are going to be go out of sight. You're going to get a feeling when you're leasing a sign that the sign doesn't really belong to you. It is a lease because the sign company ends up doing everything as if they owned it. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this now is we go to the next thing that we're covering right here, the equipment lease. You're going to get a feeling when you compare the equipment lease to a sign lease, the equipment lease is going to appear to be more of an ownership type thing. Why? The maintenance, insurance, and utilities are usually paid by the lessee, you, the business owner. And again, there could be a purchase clause built in, which means at the end of the period, you could then apply a certain percent of your lease payments to the purchase price and add a few dollars, whatever it happens to be, and end up owning the equipment. And that's in most leases. If it isn't, ask them about it, and they'll probably put it in for you. The key thing to keep in mind, though, is when you're looking at an equipment lease, you're going to get a feeling that you're really owning it, and it's another form of financing. And yes, that's true. It's just another form of financing, even though it's called a lease and it follows the same terms as a sign lease. You're going to get a feeling it's a little different. And again, as I said before, under the sign lease, you're going to find also on the equipment lease, when somebody else comes along and wants to buy your business, you're going to find it's relatively easy to have the next person assume or take over the lease and take your position.